When you need the independence to speak your mind, you take it on the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5 FM.
The time is now 12 noon. Now time for your favorite doctor, the lunchtime doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Vibe City 105 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Dr. Sophia Mohammed in studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Basin. Good afternoon to all those tuned in to your Lunchtime Doctor. This is the program where you get to dissect those medical challenges with myself, Dr. Sophia Mohammed. Let's make sure we optimize your health. Let's know what those next steps are. And of course, to all those who are having lunch, share with us what's on your lunchtime plate. Let's make sure you're following those health habits that we recommend right here on your Lunchtime Doctor. I am Dr. Saf, here to answer your questions. Now, over the weekend, base, we would have seen a number of activities in the space of wellness. I'm so grateful that this is now a conversation that is being opened up. Not just mental wellness, spiritual wellness, emotional wellness, financial wellness, the things that would cause a lot of stress. In fact, on Saturday, CARICOM themselves had declared since 2011 World Wellness Week, and it continues. We would say, well, for me, you all know every day should be a day for health and wellness. So we're certainly going to be giving you that health and wellness advice right here on The Lunchtime Doctor.
All right, folks, of course, our numbers to call are 627-3223, 625-2257, and send your WhatsApp messages to 306-1065. Remember, you feel free to message our other frequencies, and they will let us know your questions right away.
Some other news that I must share right here on our Lunchtime Doctor, and this is news that broke my heart over the weekend. One of our very favorite callers. He calls just about every single week asking specific questions, and unfortunately his home was in a fire. Unfortunately, he succumbed. So our heart, our prayers go out to the family of that specific caller. We'll give his name later on.
That was the guy in Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz caller. That's right.
Okay.
So to all of our listeners who would have accustomed hearing that specific caller from Santa Cruz, always asking something out of the ordinary, but of course, using that point of question to inform our listeners. Mm. Unfortunately, what I heard from the different news conversations is that he also had concerns with his eye health, and he may not have been in that position to realize when a fire was happening in the home. Yes, it really is. I was in tears when I heard it. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of brings up, not that we like to use difficult news, challenges, news like that.
It's an opportunity to
inform, but it really brings to the forefront to all of our listeners who are indeed those with especially concerns with visibility, concerns with mobility, moving around. If there's a caregiver, let's make sure that someone is in a space that can help our elderly. Those are at risk because they're the most treasured persons.
Yeah, but there are a lot of elderly people living alone, especially, well, you know, visually impaired folks living alone. That's very sad. Not everybody may be able to afford a smoke detector, that sort of thing, you know. So
let's just make sure we put things in place. In fact, and I've shared this openly right here on the radio program, both my mother and father are indeed challenged with both diabetes and heart disease. My dad certainly has certain eye challenges. So that same moment, I reached out to my parents and said, you know, what is our plan? Let's make sure we have something in place, because I'm not in that space with them every single day. So I want to encourage all of our listeners, if you are driving your vehicle today on the roads, or if you're at home listening, what is your plan in place if there's an emergency? If it is, you need to go to the hospital quickly, or if it is indeed some sort of disaster like a fire, let's not wait until it happens and then we try to figure it out. Let's put a plan in place.
All right, Doc, what's in the Health Plus for tomorrow?
Well, this entire week, we're continuing along the aspect of children's mental health. As we started the academic term last week, some schools are starting this week. So we want to make sure we get our teachers optimized to understanding some of the concerns our children go through. So we're going to go a little bit of a deep dive into anxiety that children experience, some of their behavioral concerns, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and of course, sleeping concerns. What affects their ability to focus and concentrate? And believe me, it'll be information applicable to even adults. That's in our Health Plus tomorrow.
All right. Somebody wants to know, doctor, you're the lunchtime doctor, but you're on at lunchtime. When do you get a chance to eat?
Very good question.
Yeah, I always wondered that myself.
And here's where I probably am not as good at following my own advice. But here's what I make sure I do. I make sure I have a solid breakfast. I may skip lunch at times. Right here in the studio, there's a cup of coffee next to me. So unfortunately, the coffee might be lunch today, but I certainly had my fruit and it was energized. I'll give you all what that fruit is. I'm a big fan of banana, peanut butter. Sometimes I add some almonds to it, and that's my power fruit, my powerhouse of energy that I utilize just before, because I also don't want the stresses of GERD, of reflux, all of that different things that we try to do in one day, especially on a Monday. So to the person who sent in that question, excellent question. If you would like to, let's see, if you want to come up with a healthy lunch for Dr. Saf, send it in as a message and we'll certainly entertain it on live air.
All right. Our condolences to the family of the fire victim. Just hearing it's one of the frequent callers to the Lunchtime Doctor program has me in tears as a fellow listener. I feel like I know him.
Yeah. That's exactly how we felt. I have never met him, but we felt like having heard him, having chatted with him, we felt like we knew him. And that's how we feel connected to every single one of you all. I remember your voices the same way you all remember my voices. In fact, again, over this weekend, we did another outreach. And certain persons in this rural community, they shared that they not only take down the information, some of the elderly folks, they not only take down the information, but they then use it at Sunday lunch and they have these discussions about their health. So I want to encourage those type of conversations. Let's make sure we not only take care of our happiness and fulfill all of the other needs of the day, but let's make sure we take care of our health.
All right. Good day, doctor. I am taking a capsule by the name of Simpa for my liver. Can I take Triflex tablets together with it?
Now, we don't like to particularly discuss brand names here on the program. What I certainly will suggest that most of these medications do have contraindications and they do interact with each other, especially medications that are processed or metabolized by the liver. So what I suggest, very next time you do go to your healthcare professional, write down that question, because sometimes when you're in the space of your health, your doctor, you may feel a little intimidated and may not want or remember the question. So write it down and make sure you ask them. I certainly can answer it off air, but not on live air.
All right, good day, doctor. How do you know if you're nearsighted or farsighted?
Very good question. So there's a simple visual testing that is incorporated by the optometrist, by the opticians, where they actually would give you the letter board and it's at a specific distance away. And of course, they would then check the way the eyes, the refraction lens of the eyes, in terms of how far you can see. So that would basically be based on what your optician, your optometrist will indeed assess. That's where they can decide if it's long-sightedness or short-sightedness. What I would like to ensure, however, that all persons, especially our students, as we restart this academic year, that you do ensure there's a proper, a comprehensive visual test done. Because 88%, and this is a stat I shared recently on air, 88% of learning disability to vision problems. So let's make sure we get all our children get their eyes checked.
All right, you listen to the Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Of course, we're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Our numbers are 627-3223 or 625-2257. You can send your WhatsApp messages to 306-1065. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Beach.
Good day, sir.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon. You're live on air. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Thank you very much. I've been listening to you for a while. And that start to just give me this. I'm very surprising, and thank you very much for that. You opened my trend of thought where education is concerned, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
You just said to me 80-something percent of learning disability is based on visual input.
Yes.
More or less.
Definitely.
Thank you very much for that.
So
a lot of us understood what was just said there.
And I hope they really do, because, and it's a simple, just getting the children's eyes checked. And what we saw during COVID in particular, because everyone had shifted to the digital screens, there were indeed increases in visual competencies in terms of challenges that the opticians would have anecdotally reported on, that even the American Association of Ophthalmologists reported on, that they saw something developed called computer vision syndrome, where children presented with blurred vision, they presented with headaches. Obviously, if children have problems with seeing, then they certainly will not be able to function properly in the classroom.
We know a lot of parents might think, oh gosh, the glasses and stuff are so expensive, you know, for the children. That may be a consideration for some parents as well too, but you know,
it's maybe always a consideration. And yeah, yes, there's an expense, but when you look at it, it's a preventable expense.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at what the long-term effects are,
yeah,
of the child, in fact, I remember doing an interview of one who, after they got the exam result and for the parent, and they said not until they were able to get their children's eyes checked they realize that his results, his marks in the exams, went up considerably.
Yeah, yeah.
They felt so guilty. The parents felt so guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, yes, they share the excuses. You know, this is happening. Life happens. We know that. And it's always juggling a set of different balls. But we must understand something as simple as getting your children's eyes checked can make or break what their ability to focus is, what their ability to function properly in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's an expense, but it's one that is worth the investment.
Yeah. What about children who are always in front of the phone and the tablet that are constantly looking at television?
So all of that puts them at risk of challenges. So that compromises their eye care, especially even adults, just before you go to sleep. And that's why there is the blue light. You would have those different protectors, different shields. And of course, we encourage persons at least 2 hours before you go to sleep, if possible, disconnect from your phone screen. It is, again, I know how difficult it is. Just for myself alone, my little one, he's 11. He just transitioned from primary school to secondary school. And over the holidays, we made sure we put that rule in, completely no screen, at least before bedtime. And he's now reading different books before. So every night is either a chapter, a paragraph, something. So, and yes, we know when children start to read just before they go to sleep, that automatically stimulates their sleep centers.
All right, good day, doctor. I have fibroids. Anything, can you discuss it?
Certainly. So fibroids is something that we see quite commonly in our women population. First and foremost, let's identify if you've been evaluated, as in if there's a proper transvaginal ultrasound and a proper abdominal ultrasound. Why? Because once we know, one, where the fibroids are and the size of the fibroids and the number of fibroids, then that will determine what the treatment is, if surgery is necessary, because some fibroids can be very large. It can compromise a lot of different functions of the body, and it can also lead to anemia. So if you find you're feeling fatigued, you're feeling weak, you're feeling extremely tired, it may be because you have these heavy periods, or the fibroid itself is pulling a huge vascular supply away from your normal functions. There are, of course, other treatments. It may not be surgical treatment. It may be part surgical, so laparoscopic surgery, where a very fine needle goes in and the surgery is performed in terms of fibroidectomy and removing the fibroid based on the size. And of course, there's medications, hormonal medications to help reduce the size And we'd want to optimize your hemoglobin because we wouldn't want you to be at risk of anemia. There are a host of other things you would want to consider for someone who's who has a fibroid or fibroids. Make sure and have that conversation with your gynecologist.
Things like fibroids and the polycystic ovaries, is there any link with diet?
So a lot of people, first and foremost, the Trinidadians like to use those terminologies, and I know you're reading off the message. They like to say fibroids. So let's get the word correctly. It's fibroid, a fibroid. What it is that growth within the endometrial cavity. Yes, especially when it comes to polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS, it's very much linked to our diet. When there's a higher incidence or usage of fats, a higher incidence of use of carbohydrates, then you're more at risk. In fact, to anyone who's listening, who's been treated for PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, know that is the same exact medication that one uses for type 2 diabetes, which is metformin. That means there's the same pathogenesis, the same pathology involved. And yes, it's very much glucose metabolism. So let's make sure we watch what we eat. In fact, nutrition, exercise, stress management, that is the cornerstone. If I had to put down a triangle and say what three things I would want everyone to pay attention to, nutrition, a little bit of exercise every single day, and stress management, cornerstone of healthy habits.
All right, of course, folks, with the kind compliments of Superfarm, you are listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Sophia Mohammed, 627-3223, 625-2257. Those are our numbers. Dear Doctor, I have started taking prednisone for my rheumatoid arthritis, and my drive has disappeared. What can I do to help this?
So those two things are separately, right? They're not necessarily linked. While the steroid is crucially important, so prednisolone, crucially important for the treatment for the inflammatory flare-ups that one may experience with rheumatoid arthritis, the prednisolone itself would not directly affect your drive. Here's what you can look at. We want to ensure your testosterone levels are optimized. And yes, there's certain foods, just like we mentioned, nutrition, that can ensure your drive is optimized. In fact, we did promise that we were going to do our entire conversation on what can improve one's testosterone. So here's a few things that can certainly improve your testosterone. You want to ensure you're getting an adequate input of proteins. And of course, you want to reduce your fats. You also want to stay away from things like cigarette smoking, overuse of alcohol, or abuse of alcohol consumption. We want to lean into those green leafy vegetables, your nuts and legumes, chia seeds in particular. All of those things will give you a good source of testosterone. That's where you certainly can ensure you have that optimized drive. Anything with high protein content and, of course, reducing your fat content will certainly boost that testosterone. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, good day, Doctor. Can vitamin K treat that grief feeling in the head and cause of headaches? If so, how should it be taken? Vitamin K.
So thanks so much for specifically asking about vitamin K. So no, vitamin K would not be specifically recommended for treatments of headaches. Yes, it would be utilized in conjunction with other medications, but not necessarily just alone for treatments of headaches or migraines in particular. What we would want to use vitamin K for, because it's very much a fat-soluble vitamin, is for persons who are indeed in that perimenopausal time frame, and of course, those who are having different changes in hormonal fluctuations. Keep in mind that these medications, especially your vitamins, especially vitamin K, is one that should be managed by your healthcare professional. Why? Because it plays a specific role in the clotting factors. So there is another element called prothrombin, and it's very much vitamin K dependent independent, and that helps the body to clot. So those who have clotting disorders, so we would say patients with leukemia, patients with sickle cell, patients with bone tissue concerns that need to ensure they get that prothrombin, that's when we tend to also add in the vitamin K. But it's not necessarily just recommended alone. It must be in conjunction with. Hope that answers your question.
I get it, doctor. Can I use castor oil to melt a thyroid? It's like a visible lump in my neck. And can you tell me the benefits of clove?
Good question. So let's take the first one. No, castor oil will not melt the lump in the neck. And I understand what you're talking about. If you're seeing that growth or lump in the neck, it's called a goiter. And yes, it's very much an enlarged thyroid gland. There are several reasons why a thyroid gland can be enlarged. It can be an hyperactive thyroid gland. It could be autoimmune in relation, or worst case scenario, and this is not something we like to discuss, but we must discuss it, it could be thyroid cancer. So first and foremost, let's get an ultrasound of the thyroid. Let's just get one step further. Get it evaluated so we can ensure what is the pathology. Yes, there are different medications that can be used to help manage the thyroid hormone or the thyroid dysfunction, but it would not just be castor oil alone. Now let's jump into the next question, where they asked about the benefits of clove. Clove is one that has been used or considered a superfood all across. Just like we talk about garlic and we talk about ginger, clove is one of those that you would hear, doctor. I have heard, doctor, my grandparents talking about the benefits of clove. Yes, there isn't sufficient research to support it, but there have been those who utilize either the clove powder in particular in terms of enhancing or ensuring they have good gut health and in helping reducing their blood pressure and of course in maintaining glucose metabolism. So those are some of the general things we hear about using the clove powder or even the clove itself. Some people use it in teas. But again, it's not a substitute for your medication, but feel free to use it as an adjunct into your nutrition.
Hi, Doc. Can you tell me what happens if your prostate is 85.6 swollen? Is it cancerous?
Okay. So I'm presuming they're looking at the PSA, your prostatic specific antigen result. Now, we didn't quite get a value behind it, a unit, so I won't give you an actual analysis. And again, we've shared right here on the Lunchtime Doctor, we absolutely do not treat numbers, we treat the patient. What does that mean? Please, we encourage getting that physical exam. Always, even if there's an elevated value, a physical exam will confirm if there is indeed, or even further investigation, your radiological investigations will confirm if there is an enlarged prostate and if it's nodular or if it's possibly cancerous. So we must always combine the results. I won't give an actual analysis here on radio because, again, we don't have the units. But please, I encourage you, prostate cancer, enlarged prostate, BPH, all of that is very much predominant among our population. So go get it evaluated, get it checked out, because there's a host of things that we can do to alleviate your symptoms.
All right, and for the men who don't know about, well, some of the symptoms that you may have signs of prostate cancer, can you go over that?
Definitely, because this is one that we see in our population over and over. So one, you might be having difficulty in passing urine. It might be a dribble rather than a normal stream. You might be passing urine in the night, more frequent than usual. Or you may even see blood on passing urine. You might feel a fullness in the abdomen. And some may concern if it will affect their drive. Typically, it shouldn't affect your drive, but if there's a swelling, that discomfort can affect just about anything. So let's make noticing any concerns, one with your drive, and of course, when we say drive, we're looking at your functioning, your in terms of your relations. So let's make sure if you're noticing any of that, you go be brave, have that conversation.
All right, good day, doctor. My husband's blood pressure reads 168 over 105. Is that good?
105. Let's look at that diastolic value. So the diastolic is the one at the bottom, and the 168 is the systolic. That is what we consider elevated. It is not mildly elevated. Mildly at normal is 120 on 80. I'll accept up to about 130 on 85, but anything over is considered elevated. Even up to 140-90, I'll still be okay with it in terms of medications. But 168 on 105 can be in the ranges of stroke value. And when I say stroke, when the blood pressures, let me explain it. Think of your blood and your arteries as like water passing through a pipe. And if there's sludge in the pipe, it's going to elevate the blood pressure. If there's any sort of constrictions, again, it's going to elevate the blood pressure. And then it comes out at a force. That force may now pass on the sludge to different areas. It may go into smaller arteries, and that's when it blocks the arteries. So this high blood pressure can cause a series of problems in the body, from a heart attack to stroke, and of course to complications in different organs, from the kidneys to the eyes, and of course even the liver. So let's make sure we get that blood pressure under control, because 168 on 105 is indeed very elevated.
All right, of course, folks, your numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257. You are listening to the Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Let's get a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lunchtime Doctor.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Muhammad here.
Hello. Good afternoon. I hear you talk something just now, about the depression. So how, now, if I don't take a pressure test, how will I know about even pressure high?
Very good question.
I have a slight problem. I take a listen up then.
Right.
I take a listen up then, what doctor recommends.
Okay.
Bona even.
Yes. Now, I'm glad you're taking the medications. So how do you know if you're not able to check it? So this is where we do have their number of pharmacies. I know that you can even go to the pharmacy and they will check it for you. Or if you are able to purchase or to get one of those blood pressure machines, they're not too overpriced. They're available in many pharmacies, in many different centers. So one can check it right at home. Or there is indeed the public health center. What we recommend for all of our patients is at least check it twice a week, once a week, so you would know. But if you experience it, here's the things that we want you to know. What are red flags? You're going about your day normally, but you experience something out of the ordinary. So you may experience chest pains. You may experience feeling nauseous, dizzy, vomiting. Sometimes there may be no chest pain at all. And you may, just as trainees like to say, they get this bad feeling. But they know that their pressure can be elevated. That morning they may not be able to take their blood pressure medications. Please get it checked by a pharmacist, get it checked by the health center, because a high blood pressure reading can lead you to having a heart attack. You know, Bass, I remember when I was an intern or even a resident working in the medical wards, on any given medical call day, we would see something like 60-80 patients on a daily basis coming in with signs and symptoms of chest pain. 60 to 80 patients a day. Yeah. And out of that, at least, again, say more than half would have been confirmed cardiovascular disease. And when persons say, well, there are always concerns with beds,
Yeah, there's
always concerns with beds.
Sometimes it's our fault.
Right? And it's you know, fault is something, blame is something that's so subjective. Yeah. Once we start to take responsibility, yes, we know the healthcare system can do so much more, but we also have that personal responsibility to ensure we eat well, to ensure we at least balance. Mm. Right now, I see in Base having his water, his full, how much is that? 500 mils?
Yeah. Yeah, every day. Drinking my water.
Right? And that is a conscientious choice. Mm-hmm. In fact, I should exchange my coffee for water.
Yes, you should. I just had a talk to you. All right.
Yes.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Basan. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
Doctor, I just want your clarification and your advice on a matter that I come up with frequently when I go to get advice and seek to help people, when, especially in the urology ward in the San Fernando clinic hospital. Okay, so the thing about it is, I know that a first-time patient would be viewed by the consultant, which is, and I won't call the names, but the consultant has recommended the doctor, like whatever his name is, it would be on the card. That would be the rest. But when you go first time as a first-time patient, in the clinic, you're supposed to get checked out by this consultant. But that is not happening in the San Fernando Hospital. While I have no perks about, no hiccups about the interns, the junior doctors, they're doing fantastic job, and they, you know, they're trying to help, but their knowledge is limited. And the urology ward is critical cases with people with prostate and pee in blood and all this kind of thing. And you don't ever get to see the consultant. They absent every time, every clinic day. They're not there, right? Even when you get referral from the clinic to go to the urology ward in San Fernando Hospital, right, when you go there, is another junior doctor that is recommended surgery, everything for that. This is not, from my experience, this is not right, Doc, and I'm sure you will clarify with me.
So thanks so much for letting us know. I'm not in the San Fernando General Hospital at present. I used to be there about a decade or so ago, and I'm very glad you brought that up to the forefront. I certainly noted it, and I do know there are Ministry of Health officials that tune into this program. So I hope if they are indeed listening, it comes up in their discussion, especially in the SWRHA category. So let's make sure. Thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. You're very correct. It's supposed to be at least a senior personnel consultant or even the registrar, because that's a senior doctor reviewing on first time visit and at least having a proper action plan. So if that's not happening, it is definitely something to address, and I'm glad you brought it to our attention. I do hope the rest of the patients there ensure that they are getting some sort of optimal health care, and this is something that always trouble me, because everyone deserves optimal health care.
All right, good day, doctor. About 3 months now, I fell down a hill and hit my knee. It's swollen for a while. I did an x-ray, and the doctor said it shows narrowing of the bone. What can I do at home? Because I'm still getting pain, and the knee feels stiff sometimes.
Right. So unfortunately, that happens once there's some sort of injury. So let's start first and foremost. I don't know if there's any surgery or any sort of direct invasive therapy to the knee, as in sometimes we may even have to inject directly into the knee in terms of helping heal different aspects of if there was a tear or etc. Anything along those lines. But following up, I'm pretty certain that he would have put you on a couple exercises, physiotherapy in particular. That is to ensure you're just getting some level of movement, mobilization with the knees, especially lower limb mobilization. So one, what can you do? Ensure next time you go that those exercises are indeed recommended. You could even seek out a physiotherapist. You can, of course, see what exercises can be done with the knee directly. And of generally, you want to ensure that you are giving yourself some level of mobilization. So even if it means just walking up and down the stairs or doing the proper stretches before and after the exercise, just to be able to allow that proper blood flow to ensure the knee heals well. The thing about joint injuries, if they persist, they're going to present with arthritic pains, tremendous amounts of pain later on. So you want to be able to give it enough time to heal, but at the same time, ensure you get that level of mobilization, which is the physiotherapy. Hope that answers the question.
Hi, good afternoon, Doctor. What could you say could cause someone to lose weight drastically? She's in her 70s with no complications.
Anyone that loses weight in a very quick time frame, we must rule out cancer. It's not something we like to discuss, but it's at the very top of the list when it comes to what is a main cause for weight loss. It could also be thyroid concerns, because someone who has an overactive thyroid can also lose weight tremendously quickly. Even type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetics in the very earlys of their diagnosis, if it's undiagnosed, can lose weight rapidly. So it can be a number of things, but let's make sure we get to the bottom of it.
I'd have a blood pressure reading here. My last blood pressure last night was 118. That's 118/85. A 54-year-old female. Is that bad?
That is excellent. So you're just about that textbook value, the 120/80. The 85 is still a little bit higher than what I would want, but it's still acceptable. So when I say acceptable, it's not something that's going to have me concerned, as in please go to the health center right away. That's something you can adjust, because you did it at the end of the day. That may represent your activities throughout the day. What I would encourage is, just before you go to rest, is do a little bit of meditation or breathing exercises, deep breathing in particular. And I'm pretty certain after about 10 minutes of these exercises, you will see a dramatic change in your blood pressure.
All right, someone sent a number of readings here. They said they got it from the health center, but nobody explained to them, right? So, CBC, I'm seeing here 5.30, right? CBC. Mm-hmm. Right, the WBC again 5.30. Yeah, RBC is 4.86. There's an asterisk next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, HGB is 131.0. Right, HCT percentage is 0.40.
So those are values. What you can do is we'll send it across to my phone.
Okay.
So those are values of your complete blood count.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at the hematocrit, they're looking at the hemoglobin, that's your HGB, your red blood cell, your white blood cells, their WBC, right? I'll take a closer look at it and I'll be able to evaluate it. Now my question would be, is why in particular was a complete blood count done?
Mm-hmm.
Are you experiencing signs or symptoms of anemia, or is it that you had signs and symptoms of an infection or inflammatory process? So if that is the case, then I certainly will want to be able to address those signs and symptoms first and foremost, before we even just look at the blood result. From the first review of it, nothing is out of the ordinary there, other than probably your red blood cells. But I will take a deeper look at it when I actually can review all of the results. And before the end of the program, I'll address it.
All right. But when you do get this, and there's an asterisk next to some numbers, is that a cause for alarm?
So not always, because the asterisk could even be, unless it's really out of the range. So the asterisks can tend to be that it's either higher or lower, or there was a problem in evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, especially with your complete blood clot, there may have been hemolysis. What does that mean? The time it took from taking the blood in terms of in the test tube to after reaching the lab, it may have sat too long, it may have hemolyzed, it may have coagulated. So that may now be rendered a false sample or a sample that needs to be redone. So most times that asterisk just indicates, well, something is off and we need physician's referral in terms of complying and understanding exactly what is wrong. So sometimes that's why we may need to even redo the blood test. Or that's why you also see, especially from the health center, there's a time frame to when they say, okay, bloods are being done at this time. It can't be done outside of that time frame. So I will never encourage anyone to be too alarmed. If you're seeing an asterisk, let your physician guide based on the result. Again, we never just treat a result. We treat what the person is experiencing.
Well, this is how they do in the clinics. They just sits and explains to you.
And it's really terrible, really terrible. It's not in all clinics, and I will defend some clinics because recently one of a very close relative was in the oncology clinics, and of course they would have shared they got quite good attention. So it may not be all the clinics, it may be some of the clinics, and yes, that's a resource problem that definitely needs to be addressed.
All right, of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm, 6273-223-625-2257. Send your WhatsApp messages to 306-1065. Hi, Doctor, I have a problem with my thighs and legs. They are very dark. I tried cocoa butter or oil. Is something wrong with me? And what could I use for it?
So when there is a change in the skin itself, there may be the hyperpigmentation, and it may be directly related to edema, as in swelling or fluid collection in the lower limbs. Is there something wrong? I definitely will need to see to evaluate. It could be a skin condition, or it could be cardiovascular related. But we do know once there is some level of edema or fluid accumulation in the lower limbs, there tend to be a change in the skin texture and, of course, the skin coloration. That may be, as they say, a hyperpigmentation. What would I encourage? Let's make sure we get your heart evaluated. If there's any sort of swelling, then it may be some sort of peripheral artery disease or peripheral vascular disease. All of that is treatable. And of course, let's make sure you're on the right medication to help ease that symptoms. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Doctor, in the opposite of somebody who is losing weight, what can be done for somebody who's putting on weight? What do you say?
That's just about everyone, I think, in Trinidad and Tobago, or the world. In fact, someone was discussing with me, in addition to COVID-19, there was a COVID-20, where everyone, because they were home, they were stressed, they put on about 20 pounds, right? Mm. So what can we do? I tell people over and over, it's not guesswork. It is indeed a science. Calories in must be less than calories out to be able to lose weight. If you're putting in more than you're expending, then obviously you're going to put on weight. If you're putting in less than you're expending, you're going to lose weight. If you're also having some level of exercise, then you're going to be burning that calories. Watch what you're eating. It really boils down to nutrition. I'm sure all of our listeners would have heard the percentage is 80-20. As in, if you want to lose weight, 80% of it is what you eat, 20% of it is your exercise. So watch what you eat. They always say you cannot exercise away a bad diet. So you can exercise all you want, but if you're eating poorly, and what do we mean by eating poorly? Watching your saturated fats, watching your sugar intake, watching your salt intake. Just by monitoring those three things, monitoring your carbohydrates, switching out for your healthy substitutes, you're certainly going to lose weight. Add in that level of exercise, burn the calories, get yourself into the aerobic burning zone. And what do we mean by that? You want to get your heart rate to a level where you're feeling the body sweating. As I just shared over this weekend, we did a 5K, and to all those, as a good way of starting, getting on the right fitness tracker. To anyone and everyone, anyone at any age, can start some level of exercise. It can easily be just walking up and down your step, walking around a certain building or house, being more engaged in these exercise competitions if you want, or just going out in your garden, nurturing the plants. Often you all would have heard me talk about my 106 years now, 106 year old great grand uncle. And guess what? Even up to this day, he's still bending down, nurturing his plants, making sure the garden is okay, eating from his garden. And that's what he considers his daily exercise. He walks around the yard itself and gets that sweat. He said he never goes into bed at night without sweating every single day. So that's your formula to losing weight.
All right, folks, we're just about 11 more minutes before 1 o'clock. Good day, Doc. My wife has a problem whenever they have to put in an IV. Vein is hard to find, and she ends up with swellings. It became a liquid, ends up in her legs or hands, which have caused her to suffer from a cellulitis. Right? Any help in developing the veins?
Okay. So from what you describe, it may be that you're already in a position where there's swollen limbs. And when we say swollen limbs, there may be fluid collection in either the hands or the lower limbs. And that's why there may be problems with identifying the veins. One, what I definitely suggest is you watch your salt intake. You want to reduce that salt intake because you want to help redistribute the fluids. You want to make sure you're staying compliant with the medications. Of course, when they go there to do the process of taking the bloods or getting the IVs, just let them know. Let them know that there are typically a lot of difficulty. In fact, I remember, again, I used to work in the ICU, so they used to call me the IV whisperer. They would sometimes call me from the ICU to come down to A&E, doc, come put in this IV first, because some veins themselves can be, as we say, difficult. So what we suggest is you ensure you at least hydrate before, pop up the veins. They will have their specific techniques in getting the veins to quote-unquote pop up, but it really depends on what your fluid circulation is like, because if one is at risk of edema, then the fluid itself would be around the tissues and the veins will be very difficult to find. So let's make sure we get that under the wraps with whatever medication has been prescribed. And of course, you will see a change once you are compliant with it in terms of them finding the IVs.
All right, doctor, if I want to put on some weight, should I eat more at nighttime?
So, one, no one needs to ever put on weight. If you want to put on weight, I would suggest put on muscle weight. Let's not go into an unhealthy habit that you're going to pay for 5-10 years down the line. If you want to put on weight, why not put on healthy muscular weight? And yes, there are indeed ways of putting on your muscular weight where you're going to increase your proteins, increase your resistance exercises, increase the muscle band, those exercises as well, and you will put on weight.
All right, good day, doctor. My period has not come for the last 3 months. Can you say what can cause it?
Yes, certainly. I would like if you're able to give us your age. If you are close to that perimenopausal time frame, then it may just about be in entering that stage. So what would that age be? Anywhere between, I would say, between 45, 48, 51, etc. All of that is when you are at that time of perimenopause. How does one know? Because one may miss the cycle 4 months after each other. Once there's no period in 12-month time, then you're now entering the menopausal time. There are other things, of course, that can put one at risk of missing the cycles. It can be fibroid, as we mentioned earlier, different hormonal disturbances. Please take that step next forward and get it checked by your healthcare professional or the gynecologist in particular. Hope that answers the question.
All right, folks, you have just about 7 more minutes. We'll take our 102 calls, 627-322-3625-2257. Lunchtime, doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed. Dr. Mohammed, I was talking about this, right? I had a drug addiction for many years. After I stopped smoking, I gradually lost my sight. Right now, I'm visually impaired. Now they sent me to a rheumatologist, and now they're telling me that I have a case of lupus.
Okay.
I get a lot of joint pains. I get terrible headaches. I get constipated. I go to the bathroom a lot. And is there anything that I could, you know, they give me medication, they give me some tablets. One to take three times, well, no, three every Saturday, and the other two is one every day. I don't know the name of the tablet, because we have to go and refresh it right now. Is there anything that you could tell me that would help me in my situation? Please, thank you. Have a blessed day.
I'm so sorry you're enduring all of that. And the thing about lupus, it's one of those autoimmune diseases that can unfortunately affect just about every organ. But here's the very interesting things we've found in terms of improving the quality of life of our lupus patients. Just like I would have mentioned, the looking at your nutrition, that helps tremendously. You want to stay away from some of those foods that have the high acidic content. You want to choose things like whole grains. So if you love bread or pasta, why not whole wheat bread, whole wheat pasta? Stay to your brown rice rather than your white rice. All of those other things will exacerbate that autoimmune reactions that elicit the pains and distress that lupus may present. So there's no special lupus diet per se, but we want to ensure you're reducing your risk of complications, because one of the big complications of a lupus patient is that it can affect their kidneys, leading to a lupus nephritis, or further, as in shutdown, as in kidney failure. So we want to ensure that we're also balancing the fruits and vegetables, balancing the healthy proteins, and of course the healthy fats. I would suggest have a conversation with a nutritionist. Continue, stay very compliant with your medications, especially for our lupus patients, because at present, if you ease off the medications or switch anything out, it can certainly exacerbate complications. I hope that answers the question. And there is, of course, a lupus support society here in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm going to get that information, so stay tuned. We will mention it tomorrow on the program, as we're down to the last couple of minutes on this program.
All right, Doc, let's talk once again into our Help Plus for tomorrow.
So we want everyone to stay engaged with myself, Dr. Mohammed. You're going to here, myself joining CNC3 Morning Brew just about 7:30, 7:40 in the morning, and of course our article in the Guardian in under the Health Plus banner. You'll see that nice Health Plus logo. In tomorrow's particular edition, we're very keen on looking at the anxieties children experience, those behavioral disorders, improving our mental, emotional wellness. This entire week is designated Wellness Week. For me, it should be every single day. And yes, soon you're going to be seeing and hearing much more information on how we can improve our emotional wellness. And we're even going to dive into spiritual wellness, financial wellness, all aspect of our holistic development.
I just have about 2.5 minutes. Let's get one more question. Hi, good day, doctor. Why is it the sugar not going down and I'm taking my tablets in the morning? The Macron before I eat, and one Metformin 500 G's after I eat.
So when it comes to the medications that you're on, we want to pay particular attention not only to what you're eating, but of course the 2-hour postprandial and your fasting. That will give us a very good guidance on what, how the body is responding to your medications. Sometimes we may need to adjust the medications up or down, or increase even in nighttime based on your glucose metabolism, based on one's age, based on the complications one may experience. Unfortunately, that glucose metabolism can be different in different patients. So what I suggest is, one, stay consistent with your medications. Watch what you're eating. That nutrition plays a huge role. Note down the There's something called your glucose diary. So just note it down in your book, whatever day you're checking your blood sugar, if it's a fasting. So fasting should be the very first value you do in the morning, even before you have anything to eat or drink. And then a 2-hour post-prandial, 2-hour post-meal. That will give us a very good idea of what you want to do that in the morning and then probably after lunch or after dinner. Do it about 3 times for the week. That will give us a good idea of your diabetic profile. And you can even liaise with, connect with our Diabetic Association of Trinidad and Tobago, because within there, once you become a member, I know we have these diabetic profiles, these little diaries easily available for our patients to be able to note down the values. And of course, you will get that guidance. Tomorrow, we're going to also talk about the different locations that we're having the free eye clinic for this incoming month. All of that and more in your Lunchtime Doctor tomorrow.
All right, Doctor. Well, thank you very much as we wrap it up for today with the kind compliments of Superfarm.
So make sure tune in tomorrow for your Lunchtime Doctor. As always, my heartfelt appreciation to everyone at Superfarm, for the entire team right here at TBC Network, and of course, you all, my cherished listeners. I want you to not just hear the program, learn something, take the information, save a life today.
All right, folks, you've been listening to the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.1 FM. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
When you need the independence to speak your mind, you take it on the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5 FM.